it's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Welcome to the Top Order podcast. Just like test cricketing crowds, the Top Order is diminished in terms of attendance this evening as well. The ground just 50% full for this episode of This Week in Cricket. We will talk a little bit West Indies Australia, India, New Zealand, England, Pakistan, and goings on from around the cricketing world, including brief chat about the White Ferns, all coming up on the Top Order podcast. Stay tuned. Well, Lippy, we've got multiple swishes. A swish for each absent member of the Top Order podcast, I think, for this evening.
Don't Lippy onto the controls. That's the role of this.
Mate, so look, just me and you catching up this evening. Baldy and Raj, unfortunately, they're on planes from one day series to join the test series and haven't quite made it in time. But look, joking aside, we are going to talk a little bit about that. It doesn't seem too long ago. I was back from Melbourne celebrating a bit of silverware for England. But if we kind of look at it since then, England have played 3 one-day internationals and started a test match on a completely different continent. India and New Zealand have completed 2 white ball series in that period of time as well. And Australia as well, kicking off a test match at Perth, the opposite side of the country to that MCG final a little over 2 weeks ago. So lots going on in the world of cricket. But let's start with New Zealand, India. You boys went to the game at Eden Park, the ODI game. Just tell us a little bit about how that felt after, a diet of T20 cricket over the course of the last sort of 4 or 5 weeks.
Yeah, it's funny because the first thing, Raj and I met up in the morning and jumped on the bus. And sort of the first thing Raj said to me was, it sort of feels really weird to be going to a game of cricket that's going to last all day. And I think there were actually quite a few things that sort of stood out that we might get into, I guess, the differences of one-day cricket and T20 cricket. But I think actually the thing that stood out most to me is that I really love ODI cricket. I know that there's been so much chat around how do we kind of fix one-day cricket and how do we sort of take away these boring parts in the middle and all of that kind of stuff. But I actually think it's a better showcase for ODI, for the talent that you need at the top level and the skills that all different players can play. I mean, am I alone on this island here, Binksy?
Look, it's a little bit of a difficult one. We've not played a whole heap of ODI cricket in recent times, and then have had to tack this 3-match one-day international series on in Australia. And look, that was to fulfil some broadcast rights. And look, we talked a little bit about it, and this isn't a sour grapes comment at all, but England didn't pick their best side, and I think very honestly and deliberately kind of probably called that out as well. And Joss Butler even, throughout the series and at the end of the series, he was talking about, really how relevant was this in the cricketing landscape. So I think that's the thing for me. And we talked a little bit about it off air. If there's relevancy, I love one day international cricket. But I just wonder at the moment, yes, there's a lead up to the 50 over World Cup, but that's, a significant period of time away still in terms of, a scheduling perspective. So I just wonder whether or not squeezing this stuff in for broadcast rights. And look, I think, the ultimate thing that you've got to point to with these is the crowds. The crowds definitely weren't there in Australia. I know there were a few people in Eden Park and there was a bit of weather around so that, there's some reasons that you wouldn't necessarily travel to see a game of cricket. But my experience has been, if we think about the last time India came over and played, I was at Eden Park and it was absolutely chock-a-block full of fans, you know, a lot of Indian fans coming out to watch the cricket. But we didn't see that uptake in the games across New Zealand over the course of the last couple of weeks as well. So, yeah, look, I think people voting with their feet a little bit.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I would say that I do think the crowds were pretty good here in New Zealand for that T20 series and ODI stuff. I know, yeah, there were a few empty seats at Eden Park. I think that's kind of always the case. It's funny, Raj said to me, a friend of his, said that he didn't go to the game because Virat wasn't there. So that's sort of a point that, you know, you raised before about picking the top sides. And that sort of never occurred to me. But, the fact that someone said that, and I suppose, to be fair, a lot of the people at Eden Park at least were, supporting India. And the Indian crowd was awesome. You know, Raj and I went and sat with them for a long part of that. But, yeah, I don't know. I just still feel like, you know, look, as a batter, you've got to go out there and kind of face two new balls. You've got to have the skills to be able to handle some early movement early in the innings. But then also because of T20 cricket, now you have to go out with and sort of have the ability to chase down 160 in the last 20, 100 in the last 10. You sort of need all facets of the game. And even as a bowler, like, you can't just bowl dot balls in an ODI, whereas in a T20, you can kind of just bowl darts and get away with with dot balls. If you're not taking wickets in ODI cricket, you've got to be incredibly economical, or actually, like, because batters can hit the ball so well in that last 20, if you're not taking wickets, then they've got such a good platform to just explode. So, yeah, I really feel like, I don't know, I just love ODI cricket, and I hope they don't tinker with it too much. And even in that game, I sort of found myself going, what is these power plays? When does this power play apply, and how many fielders are out? And they're just sort of constantly tweaking with it. And I hope it doesn't go down to 40 overs, because I think that would diminish, you know, what we get out of the game, which is almost the halfway house between Test cricket and ODI cricket.
Yeah.
And T20, sorry.
Yeah, look, my final point on it, Lippy, would be, and look, I'll make a terrible analogy. You wouldn't go and see Coldplay without Chris Martin, or Guns N' Roses without Axl Rose. And it feels a little bit like that when some of the top players are actually choosing very specifically that this is the format that they'll skip. You know, we can talk a little bit about the scheduling, but, you know, the fact that the like of Ben Stokes is, you know, retired from one day international cricket, Virat Kohli, Rohit Sharma, Jasprit Bumrah, I think, all missed this series for India. So, you know, when you're not, when you've not got those players there, for me, it diminishes the product a little bit. And, you know, after all, if you look at the way that a lot of cricket's being played now, even, you know, England in the test arena are saying this is an entertainment product and we want to entertain as we play it. I don't necessarily 100% agree with that mentality for test cricket. I'm sure we'll come on to that. But I think that, you know, it is ultimately the white ball game and entertainment product. So I think you want your best entertainers there. What did you make of the series just from I guess the actual cricket perspective? You know, Kane Williamson's return to form, Tom Latham looking really, really good, and perhaps, you know, a little bit of a damp squib in terms of some of the Indian players that we were looking forward to seeing perform on that stage.
Yeah, damp squib is kind of a good way to kind of describe the series, really. Such a massive shame that there was so much rain in this series, because I think the games that we did see, we saw some amazing cricket. Even just thinking about that T20 game, well, we had the tied game, Duckworth-Lewis, weird, yeah, bizarre situation there. But, you know, Surya Kumar Yadav's 100 in that T20 game that India did win, I mean, just astonishing. I mean, continuing on his form from T20 World Cup. Yeah, amazing, amazing player. And then moving to the ODI, that was an awesome ODI at Eden Park. I was sitting there thinking, Eden Park gets a lot of stick around the world for the short boundaries, and people kind of, you know, make fun of it as a ground, but it leads to some pretty awesome games. I can't remember going there in recent times and not having like a really good time. And that's not just because of the cricket. I think when you're there, you're sort of right on, you know, lots of, you can have lots of different views at Eden Park, and some of them end up, you're right on top of the game, it seems. We didn't actually go into the media box, but I mean, the media box, you end up, you know, you're right dead in line with the pitch. It feels like you're sort of at the top of the bowler's mark at times. And yeah, we were down with the Indian fans kind of just to the right of that. And yeah, you're so close to the action. And look, I don't know. I mean, you were messaging us, sort of sounded a bit jealous that you decided not to come when Latham and Kane were putting together that partnership.
Yeah, look, I'd agree with you. Eden Park gets a terrible rap, doesn't it, as an international cricket venue. I like it. I really do. Like you say, I think it's great viewing. It's, you know, a comfortable and relatively modern stadium. I've enjoyed every single game of cricket I've seen there, bar the England test match in, what was it, 20? Oh, I can't remember, but we were 40 for five by lunch, and I barely got my first pint and, you know, sat down to a massive amount of grief from you boys. So, but no, look, I think it is a really, really good place to watch cricket. And I think ultimately as well, that is one of the, you know, one of the great things about the game, isn't it, is that we do play on such different pitches in terms of the playing surface, but also the dimensions of the ground. You know, we saw that across even two consecutive T20 World Cups in, you know, Abu Dhabi and the Arab Emirates, where, you know, grounds are a little bit smaller. We saw some of those high scoring games. And then we go across to Australia where, you know, using the square boundaries, bowling into the wicket, running lots of twos. It was a, you know, completely different game plan. So, look, I like that, and I like Eden Park as a venue.
And I think just adding on that, I love it as a white ball venue. I don't think it's
not a test venue
for Test cricket.
Yeah,
I would love to see us, you know, find a better Test venue in Auckland. It doesn't seem like it's coming anytime soon. But I mean, look, I do want to also touch on, you know, that mainly that Kane Williamson and Tom Latham partnership. I think in one sense, it was awesome just to see Kane Williamson kind of have that moment almost. I know it's sort of a meaningless one day series in a way, but he just copped so much stick for the way that he's played over the past little while. And I've said before, I think it's kind of unwarranted, but it was just cool to basically see him play the perfect innings for the situation and just bat through that innings, have Latham bat around him. I mean, Latham, I think people kind of forgot what Latham's kind of like as an ODI player. And that, I would say that's, you know, that's got to be his best, you know, limited overs innings for New Zealand. I know it is on the scorecard, but also just the way that he managed that innings, came back and, you know, things were in the balance. And I was sitting there with Raj and we were trying to work out, I guess I'm a big one for when you're watching the game, trying to think about where you've got to get to in all these spots. And we were like, well, at 30 overs, they need to be 160 runs to win. And then at 100, and then at 10 overs, we need to be here. And basically, New Zealand was just hitting all of those marks. And you could kind of see Kane and Latham, Tom Latham, sort of doing the same thing and planning it out. And then Tom Latham just took Shardul Thakur apart, and that was game over. And they just cruised to the win. So, yeah, awesome, awesome stuff to see. And I think that even flowed on to Kane's captaincy and in the way that he, I think, took more risks, I think, in this ODI series than we're accustomed to seeing. He put in a slip to Suryakumar Yadav, which is something that you don't always see when an established batter comes in, especially when it's like we were watching Sky waiting to come into bat, and he was pacing around the dugout and he looked like he was super keen, rearing to go. Walked out there, Kane puts in a slip when India's in a great position, nicks him off straight away, and he's walking back to the pavilion. He did the same in the final ODI, I guess. And yeah, even just the way that he rotated his bowlers, bringing Daryl Mitchell on instead of Mitchell Sant. Now, I think he showed a lot of encouraging signs that we can kind of look for, I guess, going forward. And yeah, as you say, building up potentially to this ODI World Cup, we might see a bit more one day cricket.
A word from Martin Guptill. Obviously, news coming out in the, I guess, the precursor to that series, that he had some conversations around his contract. I don't know the correct terminology, but he's been released from it, I believe, in order to pursue some franchise deals still remaining available for New Zealand selection. Thoughts on that from a Kiwi point of view?
Look, I almost think that I think New Zealand had made it very clear in that T20 World Cup that they see Finn Allen as having the front spot for Martin Guptill's spot, essentially. They're prepared to put the time into him and decided that they're going to be our white ball opener going forward. Conway is there. I think there's no arguments with Conway. So in that sense, I mean, I don't know who initiated this. I guess that's where the conversation starts. Guptill might have said, well, look, if I'm not going to play that many games, why don't I go and, you know, can I be released from my contract? My agent's got me a BBL deal. I've got offers to go to the PSL and all these other leagues around the world. There are so many opportunities now. And look, I think a lot of people went, look, this is really sad. It's Martin Guptill's been treated this way and all this kind of stuff. But I don't really buy into any of that. I would say, look, there's could very well be a chance that Martin Guptill, if he doesn't get picked up with the IPL, which he's never really had much interest there in the past, that he'll play in the final series of the New Zealand summer when all of the other IPL players go off. I don't necessarily think this is the last time we've seen Martin Guptill in a New Zealand shirt. I think it's very hard to kind of give someone a farewell in these sort of times now. It's sort of just not how things work. You don't necessarily get to choose your retirement spot and all this stuff. And as much as Finn Allen has struggled at times, I do agree with the fact that he's someone who's got so much talent and he's such a match winner that it is time to give him the opportunity. And I think we saw in that final ODI that, you know, giving him that opportunity is going to give him chances to actually play innings where he can just bat. And I think trying to get him as much time as the crease in the international stage is only going to benefit him. So, yeah, look, there's no doubt Guptill has been an amazing, amazing player for New Zealand, and he'll go down as one of our white ball greats. And he's contributed hugely to the amount of success we've had in that format for the past 6, 7, 8 years. So, yeah, look, he's played a huge part. But, yeah, I think it's the right time to move on and go to Finn Allen.
Awesome. Anything we want to cover off before we leave New Zealand, India, and the aftermath of that series? We'll segue in a sec to Pakistan, England, but we'll cover some other things going on very briefly as well.
It might be just a nice time to mention also that the White Ferns are cracking into action again tomorrow. We're recording this on Thursday night here in New Zealand. White Ferns got a series, 3 T20s and 3 ODIs against Bangladesh, which is cool to have, you know, female teams here on these shores. It's not something that happens that regularly. So we obviously had the World Cup here last year, but that was the start of this year. It's sort of all merging into one. But yeah, look, kind of I'm excited to see actually Molly Penfold in the mix this time. She's been contracted and someone that I think New Zealand fans are going to be looking forward to. I guess a lot of young players, a lot of that contracting stuff, young players were brought into the mix, and now it's kind of seeing them as professional players and having that opportunity to, I guess, develop and grow their game. She just took 5 for against Bangladesh, playing for the New Zealand 11. Looked like she was bowling with really good wheels. So, yeah, kind of interested to see how she gets on. But I think this will be a series that New Zealand will expect to win, and I hope that they can do that nicely and do it well.
Let's move on and talk a little bit of Test cricket. We've got at this stage, a bonus that Baldy's not on the pod this evening. So we don't need to talk too much about Australia in Perth. They've just declared 598 for 4. Unluckily for Travis Head, he's dismissed for 99. Steve Smith bringing up a double 100 to go with Manus Labuschagne, who also got a double 100. So look, in that game, we've seen a lot of runs, a lot of idiosyncratic leaving and probably no run called at the top of people's voices far too many times for my liking. But look, joking aside, a really good batting performance there from Australia going along. And look, a rather pedestrian 3.91 per over, because there has been a test match kicked off today in Rawalpindi. It was looking under a little bit of doubt with some illness in and around the England camp, and forced them into just one change, actually, from the 11 that they named 2 days out from the Test match. But England rattling along in that first session, 177 for none at the lunch break. Zach Crawley, I think, was 90 not out or something like that, and Ben Duckett 77 not out of the lunch break, which was pretty fantastic. But has that caught your eye, or is this just too much cricket going on all at once, Lippy?
Oh, look, you summed up the Australia West Indies test. For me, as much as I want to, it doesn't inspire me to go and watch those two bat for long periods of time. I am quite interested to watch Chanderpaul Jr. have a bat. I hope he does well. That's kind of a cool thing for us, kids of the 80s and 90s to in 2000s to kind of go in there and watch another Chanderpaul batting for the West Indies. That's pretty cool. And look, I think Australia and in the series that we're about to get to, that I actually, before I saw this first session, perhaps had a lot more interest in it than me. But you know, these series are quite important for the World Test Championship, and Australia's going to be pretty keen to kind of do the to win that series 2-0 to kind of get themselves in a really, really nice position to be in that final. But look, Pakistan, I kind of thought would be in a similar boat, trying to be creating wickets to play result cricket and make this an exciting series against England. But then I watched, to be fair, I didn't watch the first hour, but then watched the second hour of that first session. We're recording this, yes, listeners, we can't really line up all these games of cricket, so we're recording this at the lunch break, actually, of the first session of the Pakistan-England test. But yeah, I mean, like you say, England just flying along, and I'm actually just so astonished with Brendan McCullum. I know it's not all him, but I've said it to you before, I cannot believe that this has lasted this long, I guess, of the turnaround. You know, I just feel like it went so well, and you often see that new manager bounce and all that kind of stuff, but it feels real now. It feels absolutely real, and it feels like this is the team that England is. And, you know, Zach Crawley under a lot of pressure, he's gone out and delivered in this game. They brought in Ben Duckett. He just looks very comfortable at that level. It was actually quite amazing seeing Crawley and Duckett standing next to each other. I didn't quite realise the height difference.
Yeah.
But I mean, like, Binksy, are you just becoming accustomed to this is England Test cricket now?
Look, probably not. I'm probably still in my pessimistic view that you've got to watch both sides bat on a wicket first, and let's see whether this turns into a 500 place 500. Stalemate, or whether the game, you know, accelerates on day four and day five, if the wicket does break up at all. It didn't when Pakistan played Australia roughly this time last year. It was, you know, pretty much three roads, and but for a fantastic bowling performance from, I think, Pat Cummins, that sealed the series for Australia. You know, it would have been a pretty dull watch, but for that. Look, it's fantastic, I think, that, you know, the guys are playing with this freedom and, you know, a brand of cricket, as much as I hate that phrase. I know you were really interested in Mike Atherton's comments around whether they're picking sort of horses for courses. You know, this selection, look, partly influenced, I think, by the fact that Ben Folkes, wicketkeeper, had to pull out this morning on the morning of the game. Jack's coming in. He's done a fantastic job, and I think Surrey have got to take a lot of credit for that. They've got a couple of spinners on the books there that didn't get as much of a go as Will Jacks last year. He averages over 50, I think, with the ball in red ball cricket, in first class cricket. But with the bat, he's a genuine batting option, and turned himself into, you know, a batting, spinning all-rounder, if that makes sense. And he's come into this team alongside Jack Leach as a genuine spinner. That, you know, they said before the game that Liam Livingston was picked as a third spinner, intimating that Joe Root was the second spinner, and now Jax has come in as well. So England have got 8-9 batting options in this test match. When you look at their side, you know, that they really do bat, almost right down, I suppose, to the bottom of their, you know, the bottom of their order. And then they've got, you know, a lot of bowling options. Only, I guess a couple of really genuine seam options. We'll see how much Ben Stokes bowls. I noticed again in all the pre-match stuff, his knee very, very heavily strapped in that, in that sort of warm-up. So Ollie Robinson and James Anderson will carry a lot of that seaming workload, I think. But yeah, look, fantastic to see so far.
Look, you mentioned Livingston before, and I should give you some credit. You did say a little while ago, I think, maybe even six months ago, that you thought Livingston was a chance to kind of work himself into this test frame. And I sort of thought that's kind of bizarre because doesn't seem, like the way he plays T20 cricket is just so, it's so different to traditional test cricket. I guess, as we just talked about, McCullum's not necessarily playing traditional test cricket. But do you think that this is picking Livingston in this series, or do you think he's actually got a chance to sort of work his way into this test side around the world?
Yeah, look, it's an interesting one. He's carded to bat at number 8 in this side. So I think that, when we're playing in Australia or we're playing in England, are we going to play a guy that bats 8 and might bowl you a few leg breaks and off breaks? And the answer to that has probably got to be no. I genuinely do think it is about going into this on really, really flat wickets with a lot of different bowling options so that they can keep the seamers relatively fresh, move things around, try different matchups, almost a little bit with that T20 mentality. But the guy's got an undoubted class about him in terms of the way that he bats. And I think, he's also played a decent amount of first-class cricket. I think he's played, 50 or 60 first-class games. So it's not like he's a bolter. He's got first-class hundreds. He's got the ability to construct an innings over a decent period of time. So maybe it's just that freedom that he will have to be able to kind of ease his way into test cricket, batting at 7 or 8, almost with no pressure on him. And then, does he become someone that can, can get themselves up to number 6 or number 7? And he is a triple threat player, isn't he? He bats, he bowls, and he feels fantastically well. So he's the kind of cricketer that I think, Brendan McCullum is going to want in all of his cricket teams. He'd be an exciting person to watch get going on a good wicket in Australia, for example. So, hopefully he can translate some of that undoubted white ball class into the red ball game. Not unlike someone like Harry Brook, who's, a really exciting player, got shades of Kevin Peterson about him and Liam Livingston a little bit as well in terms of that box office factor.
And you mentioned that Atherton comment before. For anyone who sort of didn't listen to his commentary in that first session, he was talking about how England is one of the big mindset things that they've changed is that it sort of always used to be a focus on the future of their test game. They were always building up to the next Ashes. They were resting players. They were always trying to think, okay, well, we'll pick these guys now because in 9 months' time, they might be good to bowl on Australian wickets or whatever. And the big mindset change is the fact that they've gone, well, no, now we're just going to pick the best team to win the next test. Do you think that, I have sort of some thoughts that the fact that, England was so low down in their test cricket has kind of given Brendan McCullum to do whatever he wants. And that's made a huge impact in terms of being able to turn things around so quickly. But also, do you think that the huge diet of white ball cricket has kind of made this possible? Because in many ways now, white ball, as you said, when we were talking before about ODI cricket, white ball cricket is now where people take rests. It doesn't seem like people need to be rested in test cricket anymore because there's just such, one, the squad is very different, but also, that everyone is taking a rest from this white ball stuff. And in many ways, I feel like that's made it easier to actually put some emphasis on this English test side.
Yeah, I think the only difference that you'll find with that from an England perspective is we still play far many more test matches than most other countries. So will play these three tests in Pakistan. We've then got a series in New Zealand. I think we play three test matches in February time. We then play the Ashes, and we'll have also some other, you know, I've got to admit, I can't remember who the other nation that's going to tour England in next summer, next English summer is going to be. But we'll play probably 15, 16, 17 test matches in a year, whereas other teams will only play maybe 10, 12 max. So I still think England, they're going to need to do that, particularly in terms of their bowlers. And then I think you'll find the likes of, you know, Johnny Bairstow, he's obviously got a serious injury right now. He's not being rested. But I think you'll obviously see, you know, some necessary rest, rotation, rehabilitation from injury of batting stocks in those India, England and Australia teams that play a lot more test cricket. But yeah, look, I think you're right, particularly your test only players are able now to just concentrate on that format, because they don't have to go back and play too much county or domestic first class cricket to be tuned up anymore. You know, England have rocked up in Rawalpindi, you know, a week, 10 days after a World Cup victory, and you know, peeled off a T20 score in the first session of the test match as well. So look, I think that's, you know, that's gone away. You don't need that sort of hit 1,000 red balls in order to be ready for a test series anymore, it seems. So absolutely, I think you will see that in that England test side. What I'm most interested to see is where they go with the top order. So Ben Duckett, they've made a lot about the fact that he plays spin really well. He sweeps and reverses and, you know, looks like he's a player that's going to prosper on those kind of slightly slower and lower wickets with the cross bat shots and the way that he drives with a lot of bottom hand and tries to get over the top of it and crash it through the covers. Whether or not that translates to Australian pitches or the ball nipping around in England as it does, you know, only time will tell. But he certainly, on today's performance, put a relatively decent first foot forward in his return to Test cricket after 6 or 7 years.
And look, you know, we won't talk too much. I won't quiz you too much about this series because, as you say, time will tell. And I know you want to get back to watching England smash it around all parts. It is a series that I'll be sort of paying a lot more attention to. You know, kind of, I guess, trying to get a picture of what Pakistan looks like as well, because they go straight into the series, I think, with about a 3 or 4 or 5 day gap, really, really short gap between the last test against England and then straight into the test series against New Zealand, which, you know, New Zealand's, I suppose it's going to be quite interesting to see the squad that goes over for New Zealand, particularly if these pitches are going to be like that. Contracting situation, I think there's no chance we see Trent Bolt. Kyle Jameson still returning from injury. I think there's, you know, every chance that our seam bowling attacks just is Southee, Henry and Neil Wagner. Feels like Neil Wagner might have to bowl a lot of overs and then you know, have Ajaz and possibly Michael Bracewell in there and as well. So, yeah, going to be quite interesting to see what happens. And a few, you know, few players around the New Zealand domestic scene, which we won't get into too much because there's been a lot of rain. But, you know, I think it's been really encouraging that when you go and look at the top of the run scoring charts and the bowling charts of the Plunkett Shield in particular, you see a lot of familiar names, whether they're people like Tom Blundell, who's been really, really good for Wellington and looks in great form, or people like Cole McConkie or Tom Bruce, who've been in and around that New Zealand A setup as well. It's kind of encouraging to see those players that you know, identified as the you know, top players and contenders for these sides to be actually performing. So yeah, very, very much looking forward to the next couple of weeks. And I guess the next time we talk, we might actually know what's happened in this test. So we'll be able to analyse it a bit better than we can right now.
Fantastic. Well, Lippy, always good to talk cricket, even if it is just the two of us in the virtual room this evening. Hopefully we'll manage to get our contract negotiations ready for a full return to cricket for Michael and Raj next week. We've got Hall of Fames planned. We've also obviously got the wrap-ups to this England-Pakistan test and the next one coming up thick and fast after that as well. So this series wrapped up in rapid time, England home, well in time for Christmas. lots of domestic cricket, lots of international cricket going on. Fingers crossed that the New Zealand weather starts to pick up. But for now, it's good night and good bless from us all here at the Top Order Podcast. We'll see you soon. Good night.
Sports Social Podcast Network.